Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
All of the discussions were very reasonable. We didn't have one person in any of those settings say, you need to grab everybody's gun or you need to arm every teacher. And then we brought in the legislature and politics intervened.
I hear it from people all over. This is not, you know, taking away guns. This is not about the good people that legally purchase their guns and do what they're supposed to do.
Voters are willing to explore additional revenues into the K-12 system, but there are even limits to that. Voters expect results and they're not willing to write a blank check. Proponents of additional funding for K-12 need to take voter sentiment into consideration, especially if it means going to the ballot in 2020.
What we're finding so far is that the people of Arizona are really demanding that we do something about funding our schools. And so we want to make sure, because you only get the opportunity to do this every couple of years, we want to make sure that if we put something on the ballot, that it's going to have strong support from Arizonans.
And with us to talk about the call for a legislative special session related to guns, along with a new education funding-related poll and more, our public policy consultant Chris Hurstam and Paul Bentz of High Ground. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Chris, thanks for gracing us with your presence in the very, very hot desert after this cooling off in the mountains. If you haven't heard Chris in a while, that's why. Anyway.
Pine Top is wonderful.
Yes. So let's talk about Charlene Fernandez, Chris, and what she wants to do as far as a special session related to gun reform. Certainly, Governor Ducey has said he is in favor of certain aspects of that, but has not really been in favor of a special session. We've seen that.
No, I can't believe that Doug Ducey wants to call in his Republicans into a special session on gun control any more than Mitch McConnell wants to call in his Republicans.
Oh, you think it's that,
at the
that
federal
drastic?
Level. Yeah, okay. I really think the Republicans want to stay away from this issue because, in my opinion, stupidly, they want to stay away from this issue because they still put a premium on the NRA and the gun distributors and manufacturers and the contributions that come from them. Gun control is still a litmus test issue in Republican primaries, whether just like pro-life is, and they're still alarmed by it. Now, I know Ducey's talking about his red flag bill that he couldn't even get that through in the last session. Red flag is good. I'm not saying it won't help, but it's a very tiny first step. And I think that's even all Ducey wants to do. Anything with regards that would have a true impact on this issue, such as universal background checks or banning assault weapons and high-capacity magazines and so forth, I don't think Republicans still want to touch that.
Paul, does any of that change with Gilroy, El Paso, Dayton?
Well, you got to start somewhere. I think Governor Ducey, with his Severe Threat Orders of Protection or STOP Act, had a proposal, and you know both sides didn't like it. The Republicans thought it went too far, and the Democrats thought it didn't go far enough. And usually, when that happens, that means you probably have something good in mind, at least as a first step. I'm not expecting a special session to be called, despite the fact that even former Governor Brewer said yesterday that she thought a special session should be called. I don't expect that to happen, but there is going to be at least some movement. I think smart Republicans, like issues like education and some other things, realize that something has to be done. They can't just rest on their laurels and hope for the best. They've got to do something. And at least it's a step in the right direction.
Paul is far more a political genius than I am. But I do think that the Republicans, once again, are going to be late to this issue. And in my view, we saw in 2018 Maricopa County becoming more purple. And a lot of that was because in the so-called suburbs of Phoenix, actually still part of Phoenix, but Ahwatukee, North Central Phoenix, Paradise Valley, you saw a trend of particularly college-educated women that were moving away from the Republican Party further and towards the Democrats. This gun issue plays right into the Democrats' hands for the continuation of that purpleization of Maricopa County, which, in my opinion, is just part of a statewide phase of Arizona becoming purple and, in my opinion, will eventually go blue.
Paul, both you and Chris referenced the proposals that Governor Ducey had before. Now, 2 years running, he's been trying to get something through, starting after the Parkland shooting in Florida. And, you know, sort of the conventional wisdom of a special session is you don't call it until you have a proposal and you have the votes for it, so you don't just drag it on forever. Is there any reason to think that 2 years, a year and a half after the governor first proposing stop orders and some other measures, that in the next little while there can be enough votes to get something passed?
Well, I look to the Red for Ed movement and people. It took 50,000 people to march on the Capitol to get the governor to move from a 1% pay increase for teachers to a 20% pay increase. So short of something like that, no, I don't think that we're going to see a lot of movement. I don't think there's an appetite for a special session. All of our polling shows that there is a lot of support for increased gun control measures, including universal background checks, even among Republicans. And so they're going to have to figure that out. The challenge is that you have a primary to deal with, and a primary is a significantly smaller portion of the electorate, and they're less inclined. So it's navigating that primary, whereas listening to the rest of the electorate.
And the problem is, disgustingly, that as lives are being taken, whether it be at a Walmart in El Paso or schools or wherever, our families are further threatened by the lack of gun control in society as a whole. And you have politicians in the state legislature and in Washington, D.C., that care more about their primaries and protecting their own political rear ends than they do trying to address a crisis and an attack on society, in this case, more and more by a white supremacy faction. It is terrorism, and I just think that it's disgusting that predominantly it's Republicans that refuse to show some political courage and do the right thing.
Chris, Paul referenced the Red for Ed movement and 50,000 teachers showing up at the Capitol. Groups like March for Our Lives have had, obviously not 50,000, but they've had die-ins at the Capitol. They've had other rallies there. Do you think that there, as you both have talked about, there is support for some of these measures? Do you think that we could see 50,000 gun control supporters marching on the Capitol and that having some kind of impact?
I don't know, if they're as organized as the teachers were. And even in the Red for Ed teachers movement, it took several years of frustration and an organization. In this case, and it was the Arizona Education Association and some other organizations that pulled it together. I don't know if the
March
for Our Lives. I don't know if they have that ability to pull that many people together. Perhaps, but I'm not aware of it.
Paul, your polling is interesting on this, the fact that, say, maybe certainly a majority of Republicans as well would support some sort of gun control measure, whether it's universal background checks or something else. Is this as partisan an issue as it has been? Chris mentioned litmus tests. We had Representative Fernandez on the show earlier this week, and she brought up the fact that maybe she's just being wishful, thought that this is something that can be a nonpartisan issue at this point. And I'm wondering, do you see any movement in that direction toward it being somewhat nonpartisan because of what Chris says, because of the demographics changing and whatnot?
I do believe so, but the challenge is it's rhetorically the challenge on both sides of the aisle. It's on the Democrat side, you cannot be progressive enough on it. I mean, when the governor offers up a red flag law, you don't have them saying, oh, this is a great start. They say that's not far enough. They don't embrace any steps in the right direction. It's all or nothing. And rhetorically, that's as big of a challenge as the Republican side, where they want no restrictions and no regulations. And so there's not a middle ground being met. And when you look at particularly independent and unaffiliated voters, they navigate issue to issue. They want more funding for education. They want more gun control, but they also want more immigration enforcement. So they're not a single entity. They're not the quote-unquote moderates. But there's no middle ground to be met by both sides because they both – it's not just Republican primaries. It's Democrat primaries too. And the Democrats are getting further to the left and more progressive and trying to out AOC each other in these primaries, just like the Republicans are trying to be more conservative than one another.
Chris, that is a concern some people do have, the fact that you have both sides moving further away from each other.
Oh, absolutely. I used to be called a moderate when I was a Republican over 4 years ago now. And there are no moderates really left in elect. There are very few moderates that are elected officials these days. They either get exterminated in their primaries, or, you know, their parties have moved so far to the left or to the right that there really isn't any room for them anymore, even though there's still a lot of voters in that mentality. But that's just the reality. You know, I always tell young candidates that come to me and say, hey, I'm interested in this, and I always give them advice, and they look at me like I'm crazy, is just be a one-termer. And they look at me, what? I say, just run because you believe in what you believe in. Go in, do the best job you can, and don't worry about reelection. And if you just serve one term, so be it. But don't fall into the trap of litmus tests, and don't put party ahead of state or party ahead of country. Just go at it from that standpoint. And if we could get more citizens to look at it that way and divorce themselves from parties, although I realize it's a two-party system and you got to get elected, still, if you get in there, don't worry about the reelection litmus test, or your principles will go by the wayside very quickly.
It kind of sounds like what you are both saying here is that what elected officials think and are willing to do is in some ways vastly different than what the people who put them in office would like them to actually be doing. Is that a fair assessment, Paul?
Well, the challenge is defining who put them in office. 90% of our elections are won in the primary. And so they are actually reflecting their primary electorate, both Republican and Democrat, and they're both – Republicans are getting more conservative in their primaries. Democrats are getting more progressive in their primaries. So they are actually representing those who elected them, but they serve districts that have much more people than those, and that's the challenge. Right. They're not necessarily reflecting the interests of the broader electorate or the general public, but they are very much representing the interests of their primary electorate.
Everything Paul said is correct, but – Doug Ducey has been in office now 5 years. Legislators have been in office many years. We've seen everything from Sandy Hook now to the Walmart into Dayton. This has been going on now a long time. People have been shot and killed by these assault weapons a long time, and they've done nothing. So they've had time to analyze where the electorate is and so forth, and shame on them. And in my opinion, the voters should revolt and defeat those folks that have been in office and have done nothing for the last several years.
Paul, any chance that we could see, for example, a ballot proposition on gun control? I mean, if it's something that the people in the legislature are not necessarily representing the broader electorate, could that broader electorate maybe take matters into their own hands?
Well, I'd never say never, but it takes money. I mean, it takes significant amounts of money. It takes probably, this day and age, it probably takes about $1 million to qualify for the ballot at a minimum. And that, combined with the fact that you can't pay per signature anymore, makes it even more challenging. And we just had a high turnout election, so it's over 250,000 signatures to gather to qualify for the ballot. So I don't think it comes the initiative route, but I mean, it certainly could. It's an issue that's boiling over. My wife's a school teacher. They don't do bomb drills anymore. They do active shooter drills, and that's troubling for most people, including me, and we got to do something about it. And I think that's what the governor's picking up on. It's just what can we possibly do?
And let me just point out that the initiative that you brought up, our initiative process, in my opinion, has been greatly harmed by Republican policymakers at the state capitol who have consistently now made it more difficult for you to put something on the ballot and make it easier for election lawyers to go in and challenge and knock things off the ballot. So our initiative process is far more difficult than it was just a few years ago, thanks to the Republicans and Governor Ducey that changed the laws.
That is Chris Hurstam. Also here is Paul Bentz with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Still to come on the newscap, we'll talk about potential challenger to Senator Martha McSally. Stay with us. It's the Friday newscap here on the show with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are public policy consultant Chris Hurstam and Paul Bentz of High Ground. Guys, this is what's in radio known as a segue. So, Paul, we're going to talk a little bit about gun control measures as we relate to Martha McSally as well. How big an issue do you think with Mark Kelly running obviously the spouse of Gabrielle Giffords. Is that going to be a huge issue on the campaign trail when we get to the general election?
Obviously, with his wife being Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot in the fatal, in the tragic Tucson shooting, I think it becomes an issue. I don't think it's his only issue, but I do think that he's got a unique set of experiences that he can draw upon. I think that most of the things that he's talking about are well within the mainstream, despite what some Republicans would believe. I think if they go down that road, it would be a bad move for a Republican to try to make that the issue, because I think strategically he's got, for lack of a better phrase, the high ground on that one.
Well said. A plug. Yeah, a plug for a firm. The one issue that I kept hearing about Mark Kelly that would come back to bite him in Arizona was the gun control issue. Not anymore, in my view. I think what's happened recently does give Mark Kelly the high road on the issue, and the Republicans would be foolish if they try to beat him over the head with it. Now, the NRA will probably come in and spend money.
Well, we have the IEGs, so they could, yeah.
Yeah, so who knows what that will happen, but I just think that plays into Kelly's hands.
It's interesting, Chris, to that point. We heard so much talk after Kelly got into the race, and he had that, you know, four-minute-some-odd video. There's a lot of conversation about, well, he didn't mention gun control. And that's basically what he's been doing. The group that he and former Congresswoman Giffords founded, that's basically what he's been doing for the last number of years. And yet in his announcement video, he didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I think he was probably, consultants were saying, you know, maybe you ought to stress other issues now, look more multidimensional. But it's going to come up now. And I notice he's been tweeting about all the gun issues since the shootings and so forth. So I think that issue will be front and center in the Senate race.
He's doing fine without it. He raised $4.2 million in the last quarter, more than 85,000. I've heard it's north of actually 100,000 individual donors, which is presidential. I mean, that's astronomical. He is doing fine.
Astronomical, again, good point. Right.
Well, exactly. And that's a good point, though. My wife said to me the other day, he's an astronaut. He's a national hero. We don't have very many, quote unquote, national heroes anymore. There's still a lot of people who regard an astronaut as a national hero. And that's going to be a very steep hill to climb to make it about gun control or any other number.
Yeah, during this, before the shootings, during the celebration of the 50th man on the moon celebration that was going on, if you looked at his Twitter account, it was a constant discussion of NASA and isn't it wonderful what they did 50 years ago and blah, blah, blah. So the astronaut angle is big, too, but he's also Gabby Gifford's husband, too.
Right.
And I just think he's going to be a very powerful force.
Paul, who is Daniel McCarthy, who's talking about challenging Martha McSally in the primary? He's going on a listening tour. Which are those? That's always a fun phrase for us.
I wish we could all go on listening tours, actually.
Just in Pine Top.
Yeah, in Pine Top. I feel like I get a listening tour every weekend with my daughters. No, but so he's a multimillionaire, successful real estate mogul, has done some developing, is now the CEO of Makeup Eraser, which is a very popular product. So I've been told, I haven't used it. But the... he has been approached by a segment of the precinct committeeman crowd and some others that McSally, they believe that McSally can't win the primary, and so they've tried to encourage him to run. It's a
can't
small
win the general.
It cannot win the general election. So, but it's a small portion of the electorate that's talking to him, but definitely. They've dug up that he's done some sort of reality show on YouTube. I mean, this is feeding his individual desire to be noticed, and I think he's going to use that to his fullest potential. He's an enthusiastic person. He's a good salesman. There's a reason why he was successful in real estate, and there's a reason why he sold a lot of makeup erasers. And I'm sure there's a segment of the electorate that really, really is looking for something like that. But there's also a significant portion of the Republican electorate that still wanted Sheriff Joe to be senator. So it's the same portion that think that maybe McSally has left them. Maybe she's not conservative enough. He is not to the left of her. He is not a more viable general election candidate. He's actually a much more conservative candidate.
But there's another reality person and salesman by the name of Trump that has 100% embraced Martha McSally. That's why Kelly Ward now is embracing Martha McSally. And I think in the long run, that's what will keep McCarthy out of the race, is he'll realize it's the Trump Republican Party. This is Trump's candidate. And I have a hunch he won't actually do it.
Well, I mean, McSally's already survived a brutal primary. I mean, she went against two of these types of candidates and won. From what I hear is, you know, Trump has already endorsed McSally. The most of the large apparatus in place has all endorsed her as well and said that she's the best chance, which I believe is true. If you're looking for somebody who might be able to win the general, I think between her and any of the other potential candidates, she's probably has the best shot. But we're talking about a primary with only about 600,000 voters in a state of over 6 million. So only about 10% of the electorate. So it's a pretty small segment that they're going to fight over, which means what's going to happen is they're both going to run and embrace Trump. They're both going to run to the right, which impacts their general election chances.
By the way, we keep talking about McSally, a U.S. senator from Arizona. The one person we don't seem to ever talk about these days is the other senator. Who is that? Oh, Kyrsten Sinema. On these issues such as gun control and so forth, where is she? Why isn't she taking a stand with other Democrats? This play it safe calculation.
Well, it'll be interesting to see in September, Chris, if Senator McConnell is actually follows through on his word to actually discuss it. We'll see whether she comes out and says something.
But I just think in the meantime, she really low-keys it. And this bipartisan approach to everything, I don't think it works on issues that really count when the president's making racist comments and she doesn't denounce them as a Democratic U.S. senator in Arizona. And the same on gun control. I just think that I find it interesting as a Democrat.
So you don't think people should work together, Chris?
No, they can work together, but I think she just tries to get credit for putting her name on a lot of Republican bills that get through so she can claim she got something done when there's a lot of huge issues out there that she's not speaking, even speaking on, and never saying a negative word about Donald Trump, and voting with Trump about 57% of the time, which is one of the highest percentages of all the Democrats in the U.S. Senate. I think she has disappointed a large segment of Democrats that voted for her enthusiastically just 6 months ago or 7 or 8 months ago. And it'll be interesting to see whether she tries to play that game for an entire six-year term.
Meanwhile, I think she is probably, last time I polled it, the most popular politician in Arizona. So that tells you
a
little bit about...
Well, she's getting away with it without taking stands, but I question over time how long you can do that.
Paul, let me ask you about the race we were talking about, the one that's happening next year. Mm-hmm. If Daniel McCarthy decides to get into the race, that obviously affects Martha McSally. If he doesn't, does the fact that he's even thinking about it and going on a listening tour and that sort of thing, does that affect her in a general election, or does he actually have to get in to have it make an impact?
I think he has to get in. I think that if he doesn't get in, she doesn't have to spend the money to fight him. If he doesn't get in, she can transition to a more general election approach earlier. That's the challenge that we saw in 2018, is you had McSally versus Ward versus Arpaio, and then you had Sinema, on the other hand, who day one was able to run a general election campaign. So he has to get in. I think McCarthy is not necessarily looking for maybe this Senate race, but what's next? Is there something else he can run for? There's folks who say he should run for Republican Party chairman or something like that, where if he really wants to push Republican issues, there's other places he can go without kneecapping a sitting U.S. senator who's in the right fight for her life and be effective. The challenge is, does he want to do that, or is it about him?
That is Paul Bentz of High Ground, also here with us, public policy consultant Chris Hurstam. Chris, we've got about 20 seconds left. Props 105 and 106 in Phoenix, yay or nay?
Nay. I think 105 and 106 are both going to go down big time by at least 10 points or more, and it will be a win for Mayor Kate Gallego early in her mayoral career. And her, in my opinion, Kate Gallego's political stock just keeps rising.
I will look for your mail-in ballot from Pine Top. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Paul.
I just
to have you
mailed
guys
it
here.
In. Thanks just for mailed having it
me. In. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.